Thank you, Mr. Griffith. You know, this is by, I think by far one of my most favorite, probably my favorite Sabbath of the whole year is the Sabbath after the feast. And I understand that we had Sabbath last week, but I wasn't here. Some of you weren't here. I know some of, not everybody had fully made it in from their feast travels. When Kim and I were in Costa Rica, we got a call to the law office with a message left on the voicemail that said a friend of mine had been killed in a car wreck. And so we were out last week at that, essentially. And so this is our first Sabbath back. It's good to see all of you. One of the things I like about this Sabbath is it's a time of reflection for me to think back over the Feast of Tabernacles, the going, the coming, and the getting back. I know I said to Kim before we left for the feast, just that final week before, you know, when you're making all your final prep, I told her, I said, you know, I just feel like a bunch of Yahtzee dice in a cup, just that we're just shaking around in that cup until it's time to go to the feast, and then we're just kind of, ready or not, spilled out, here we come. And I was so nervous on atonement, and I was telling Charlie Sanders this, I just could not stop working in my brain. I know that's bad. I know we're not supposed to work on that day, and I wasn't working physically, but I was so distraught. I was just practically wringing my hands with what was going on at the office. And I was talking to Charlie, and he was sympathetic to my plight. And it just seems that we put so much effort into going to the feast, and we have all this anxiety about what's going to happen while we're gone. I know I'm a, you know, I went in after atonement to work that night after I got out of atonement, went in and worked till 4 a.m. in the morning and got up, was back at work at 9 for that last Friday, and Kim came in and we got out a bunch of mail that Friday, and then we came in after Sabbath and worked till a few more hours and got more mail out. I think we got out over 100 pieces of mail trying to get gone to the feast. But, you know, I was thinking, you know, you have thoughts, is it really worth it? Is it? Because, man, it's just a Herculean effort, it seems, to get gone. And then when you finally get there, then it takes you a day or two to get kind of cooled down where you're, you know, you're not so worried about what's going on back at home. And all that's passed. Everybody, hopefully by now, is back home and your bags are unpacked and hopefully, and some of your laundry's done. And maybe you've gone to work and dug out all your emails and voicemail or whatever it is your inbox consists of. It's different for different people, but that's why I like today. One of the things that I've thought about my particular feast, and I hope it's true of your feast, is how much unity is demonstrated at the Feast of Tabernacles. And I'd like to turn to Ephesians 4 for my text. Verses 1 through 5, or 1 through 6. It says, I therefore, the prisoner, this is Ephesians 4, verses 1 through 6. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called, with all lowliness and gentleness, and with long suffering, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called in one hope of your calling. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. You know, the Apostle Paul is trying to tell us that if we're plugged into God and His way of life, we're connected to something that's very big. It's bigger than ourselves, and it's really quite wonderful. when we were at the feast, Kim and I went to San Jose, Costa Rica, and there's about 600 people there. About two-thirds of them were Americans, and the balance were mostly people from El Salvador. And there's a very big church. I mean, there's a lot of people in United Church of God are in Latin America. Guatemala has a pretty sizable congregation. I think maybe 100 plus. Kim's telling me more, maybe 500 or so in Guatemala. And I think there was about 150 in El Salvador. Is that right? Well, most of the people from Latin America that were in Costa Rica were the El Salvadorians. These are wonderful people. People that, you know, when I'm knocking around in Edmond, Oklahoma, I'm not thinking about all my brethren in El Salvador or Guatemala. And then I go down there and there's all these people that are all in United Church of God. And I'm not trying to say United's the only way. I'm just saying that they're all in the same organization I am, because they all have the same beliefs and viewpoint and have the same. They've all decided that they're going to throw their spiritual shoulder to the wheel in United Church of God. Well, there's a language barrier there. They all speak Spanish. A few speak English. Some speak a little English, and a few of the Americans speak a little bit of Spanish. So communication can be difficult at times. There's huge economic differences between the people that are there. And like, for instance, the average salary in El Salvador, and I'm not making this up, the average salary in El Salvador is $187 per month. You can't work full time in this country at minimum wage and make you can't make $187 a month in this country legally working full time. It's just our standards are so much higher. But that's the average salary. That means there's some that make more and there's some that make less. But $187 per month. I'm sure all the Americans arrived on an airplane like we did. Those from El Salvador rode a bus 24 hours on a bus. They rode from El Salvador through Honduras, through Nicaragua, and on down into Costa Rica, which Costa Rica is kind of the jewel, considered one of the jewels of Central America. It's the place where there's prosperity and, you know, political stability. Anyway, just so you can gauge this, the average salary in Costa Rica is $300 per month. Many of them are there with one suit of clothes. Many of them don't have, you know, some of them don't have electricity or running water where they're from. And then all of a sudden, here they are at the feast in an American-style hotel with, you know, porcelain and hot water and showers and clean sheets on the bed and nobody running around with AK-47s. It's really a wonderful, wonderful time. From their perspective, and it is from mine too, but I'm trying to say that from their perspective, it's really a little slice of the kingdom for them. We had to work around a lot of our differences, some of our language barriers, but we had translators on the days that it was in English. We loaned the El Salvadorians our headsets and our radios, and on the days it was in Spanish, we used those, and everybody heard the same messages. There was a lot of unity. There was a lot of sharing of finances. This took place. The rooms basically were about $50 per month. $50 per night if you walked in off the street and wanted to rent. But the Americans were charged, or everybody that was there that was, I guess, from somewhere else, paid $80 per night for their room. And this was so that the El Salvadorians could stay. Obviously, if you make $187 a month, you can't afford a $50 room. So somebody's got to pay for that. But that was one of the ways that the church, I think, wisely set up for there to be a sharing so everybody could enjoy the feast there together. So the Americans paid more. I don't know what the El Salvadorians paid, but everybody's able to be there together. There was a buffet there. It was about $8 per person. I don't know what the real price was. I know the El Salvadorians had the same breakfast buffet that we had every morning. I don't know if they had their own dining room and afterwards, but probably that was subsidized. There was a children's party. There were so many. There was 150 children there. There were so many toys donated and brought down there. So many toys donated that they had enough toys to give each child, each of the 150 children, a gift bag at a feast party, and they sent, I think, a couple of suitcases of toys and things home with the El Salvadorians. There was money collected for a pizza party and a teen party. And these El Salvadorian women, even though they're hosting, the El Salvadorians are hosting the feast site. The Americans are their guests, but they're kind of hosting the feast site. These El Salvadorian women did good works projects in order to give the American women a tea. Now, these are women that are working so that when they go to the feast, they can have money to buy and set up a tea for the Americans. Certainly kind of gives you pause. And when they show up for talent night, many of them have costumes that they've made. They've got traditional dances, and there they are. You know, I'm there with two big bags of stuff, and I don't have any. I certainly don't have any extra clothes to wear on the talent show. I didn't enter the talent show. I know Kim didn't have any extra room in her bags for a gaucho outfit for me and a quick dance dress for her. But there's the El Salvadorians, guitars, and you know, traditional dance garb. And man, it seemed like every one of them can sing and dance and play the guitar and just loves doing it. Well, let's talk about a few spiritual things. We're all from these different places, and I came to realize just how plugged in we are to something bigger. It seemed like a trivial thing, but I just noticed everybody's got the same hymn book. And I know that's like, duh, well, everybody's got the same hymn book. But it's really amazing. I get on an airplane, I fly all the way across the country, and there's people from El Salvador that all have the same hymn book that I do. And theirs is in English, or theirs is in Spanish. Mine's in English. Everybody knows the songs. Nobody struggles. Everybody knows them because they sing them all the time. Everybody knows who Mr. Armstrong is. Everybody knows why we're there. Everybody understands that everybody believes the same thing. They all believe like we do about heaven and hell, immortality of the soul, the Sabbath and the holy days. They're all eagerly watching for the return of Christ. There's a church dance with alcohol served. There was wine and hors d'oeuvres served one night for over 500 people. Never a problem. I certainly didn't witness any problem with the dancing or the alcohol. I mean, they're just all these people share our values about how to do these things in moderation. I wanted to give a taxi driver that we had repeatedly used, our group had used over and over, to take us places. I wanted to give him a copy of the Buenos Noticias magazine. And all I had to do was ask one of the El Salvadorians, and boom, there it is, appears. They got the good news in Spanish. And, you know, I know that sounds kind of like, well, what's the big deal? It's just, I guess the big deal is that we all know what these tools are. We all are reading the same magazine. We've all got the same material. I mean, think about it, that when you're reading your Good News magazine, people in El Salvador and around the world at different places are reading theirs, and they're reading the same material, the same article. There is even we're even kind of plugged into the same inside jokes. There was one incident where the head minister there from El Salvador is Mr. Cisneros. I'm butchering his name, but he doesn't speak English. There was a gentleman there named Mr. Parada that was from El Salvador that he spoke. He was doing some translating. Mr. Cisneros came up to the microphone and was, you know, going through all of this stuff in Spanish. And at that particular moment, because it was an announcement, they didn't have the translator at the back. So we weren't getting all this over our headsets. So Mr. Cisneros is up there talking all about all this stuff in Spanish. And Mr. Prada comes up to translate it. And when Mr. Cisneros steps aside, Mr. Prada says, he's saying that we don't have to keep the Sabbath anymore. And everybody just burst out laughing because, you know, they all get the joke about the, you know, the Atlanta sermon. And it just kind of hit me at that moment that, you know, this is really a big thing here, that because we're all, even well, we're from different countries, we've just kind of all got the same, we even got the same inside joke. Kind of the final thing that just really got to me about the unity that's there is, when we sang on the very last song of the very last service on the last great day, when you know that when this song ends, there's going to be a prayer and the feast is over. And we sang Onward Christian Soldiers, and the song leader asked us to sing, the Americans to sing, or the English speakers to sing in the first verse. Anyway, I don't remember how it broke up. It's not important, but it was broke up between the Spanish. The Spanish people were going to sing some of the verses, and then the Americans were going to sing some of the verses. And just to stand there, and after you get done singing, then all these people are singing out of your hymn book, Onward Christian Soldiers, in Spanish. And I'm telling you, just the hair on my arm was just, it was just electricity in the room. And I think Kim felt it. I think everybody there felt it. And I could hardly sing because I was just about in tears. I could hardly sing the words because I was afraid if I tried to even breathe, I was going to start crying. Because just the emotion of standing there with all these people from another country on the last day of the feast and singing that. So there was just a feeling of solidarity and unity in the room. So brethren, the Feast of Tabernacles is a wonderful opportunity to remind ourselves of the unity that we share with our brothers and sisters in Christ, not just those in the United States, but even with those in other countries. And although we're from different nations, language, cultures, and socioeconomic background, God's truth and His way of life and God's calling are commonalities that we all share. Please be reminded, I've reminded myself, that we're all plugged into something bigger than ourselves and something great. And I look forward to hearing all about your feast after service.